A couple years ago, my husband and I took a trip to Yosemite. We stayed outside the park in El Portal. One evening while we were driving back from the valley, I noticed that the headlights caught what appeared to be somebody laying down on the side of the road. Both feet pointed towards the street. I told my husband that there was a person laying in the pitch black on the side of the highway. He knows I love my true crime and was absolutely certain that what I had seen was just trash bags. I was so certain, I just kept saying, "No, I saw a body. I know it was a person." We made our way back to the hotel, and as we were about to park, my husband looked over at me and said, "You're really sure about this, aren't you? You want to go back?" I was desperate. "Yes." As we drove by again, I saw the feet. I had my husband turn the car back around and yelled at him to stop the car. He rolled down his window and said, "Hey, are you okay?" No answer. One more time, even louder. "Hey, are you okay?" Suddenly, the woman dressed in all black sat up. She was wearing a nice down jacket, black pants, and had her purse and three water bottles. Her makeup was done nicely, and she seemed very sweet. I could tell my husband was absolutely shocked. I asked her where she was headed. She said that she was trying to get to the Chevron station up the road, and that her mom was going to meet her there to pick her up. This woman looked to be in her late 40s. I knew something weird was going on because where we found her, the Chevron station was still another 7 miles away or so. She said in her mind she thought it was only about a mile from her hotel, and she could walk it. We offered her a ride, and she climbed into the back seat. Not before I grabbed a thick scarf to wrap around my neck and pepper spray. As we drove, we tried to ask her questions. Just chit-chat. I asked why she was laying on the side of the road. She said she had gotten tired of walking and just decided to lay down, ready to give up, whatever that means. It was winter and she had no hat or gloves on. I could tell she was very fragile. Once we arrived at the Chevron station, she thanked us, got out of the car, and sat on a bench in front of the closed Chevron station store. We offered to stay with her until her mom arrived, but she declined and said she would be fine. I reminded her that there was no cell reception in the area and triple-checked that she didn't want us to wait with her. We drove back to our hotel and noticed that there were now 2 police cars in the parking lot. They had not been there the first time we arrived back from the valley that evening. I told my husband I knew that they had to be there for that woman. I calmly walked over to one of the cars and asked if they were looking for a missing person, a woman. The officer told me that they were and asked if I had seen her. I explained the situation and that I really felt like the woman had something very bad happened to her. He thanked us for picking her up and giving her a ride. He couldn't tell me what had happened, but thought her leaving and going somewhere else was a smart choice. I asked that he go check on her at the Chevron station, just to make sure she was okay, and that her mom did eventually arrive. I'm realizing that whatever happened was at the same hotel that we were at. That evening, I looked up the local police log and found that a domestic violence dispute had broken out at the hotel. The woman had been beaten very badly, and she was so terrified that she was willing to walk in the dark without a flashlight just to escape. It's my guess that after walking about a half mile from the hotel, she was in so much pain that she just needed to lay down. I got the feeling like she thought she may actually die there. She couldn't go back to the hotel because she had already escaped and gone to the front desk to call her mom. Her husband knew she had been there and would have come after her. The front office called the police for her while she escaped. It's my understanding that the man who hurt her was her husband and was arrested. I always wondered about her and whether she went back to him. Did her mom ever pick her up? Is she safe? Now my husband listens when I say, "There's a body on the side of the road. At the time of this incident, I was 29 and my daughter was 3. I was in my bathroom bathing her and kept hearing a sound that seemed to be coming from the direction of my bedroom window. I wasn't concerned with this sound at first because I live in an apartment complex on the ground level, and people, especially kids, walk by the window in the mulch all the time. So, I continued to bathe my daughter when the sound moved from my bedroom window to my daughter's. Now I noticed the sound shift, and so did my small dog. She's typically the quiet type as she's 12 years old. The sound was almost as if there was someone tapping a metal object against the glass. Alert at this point, my dog lets out this ear-piercing bark, one I have never heard from her before. Feeling on guard now, I removed my daughter from the tub and wrapped her in her towel and told her to stay in the bathroom as I proceeded to the kitchen and grabbed a knife. Fight or flight at this point is kicking in as my dog recedes from the direction of my daughter's room. I approach it. Entering the doorway, I begin hearing in a sing-song, low, guttery voice, "I'm here to play with a very pretty lady, a lady that I know, a lady that I see, a lady that I often see in my dream." Absolutely beside myself at this point, and my fight or flight senses always in fight mode, I reached the window and drew open the curtains. As the voice kept singing the song and the tapping sound kept repeating on the window, I snatched the blind string and opened the blinds quickly just to come face to face with an old man, bearing a long and dirty beard with eyes that sunk into his head and dark as the night was. He looked at me and grinned, a grin that I can only describe as the one the Grinch wore when he devised his plan. Stuck in a shocked panic for what seemed like an eternity, but was probably no more than a second or two, I began to spring into action. I turned, jetted into the bathroom, and grabbed my daughter and my cell phone. I ran to my front door, still holding the knife, just in case the man happened to run towards my door. I was dialing the police and on the phone with the dispatcher as I ran out of my door and to my neighbor's house. I proceeded to bang on her door with as much force as possible to get her attention. I wanted my child safe at least. She flung open her door, upset of course, until she saw the terror on my face. As I handed her my daughter and began to force myself into her apartment, the old man came running around the corner and into the breezeway, lunging straight for me with a knife of his own. I managed to get my neighbor, her 3 kids, and my daughter into the door as this maniac arrived within arm's length of me. Slamming the door, I told her to take the kids and get into the bathroom because that's the only room in the apartment that the door locks and that there's no window. The old man was now banging and kicking her door, as well as dragging the knife down it. I stayed at the door to ensure that he did not make his way inside. And as I'm sitting on the floor, my feet pushed up against the coat closet base and my back firmly against the door, I heard a booming voice. "Drop your weapon and get on the ground now!" I sat listening as the sounds of a tussle came from the breezeway. Then, boom, boom, boom. "You can open the door, ma'am. It's the police." Relieved, I eased open the door in time enough to see the one officer exiting the breezeway with the man, and another asking me if I was okay, and if I could answer a few questions. I spent about 15 minutes explaining the situation to him, as he jotted down the notes on his pad. The other officer then approached us with 2 window screens, as the old man had taken the one off my window and my daughter's in an attempt to get inside. The approaching officer asked me if I recognized the man, and I told him I have never seen him before in my life. This is when the officer looked at me and said that this man admitted having been following me for about a month. He first saw me at the grocery store, which is within walking distance from my apartment. Since then, he had watched and waited for the opportunity to try to get into my apartment, to play with me, according to him. This man followed me for a month. And to make it even odder, I would tell my then boyfriend that I felt at times as though I was being watched and I was scared. The main thing I am thankful for is that I'm the type of person who locks all the windows and doors, no matter how safe I feel. For a bit of context, after moving to a more rural area, I haven't been able to see my grandparents as much as I did when my family and I were living in the city. Because of that, once in a while they will take the long drive over here to stay for about a week or two. Last Monday, that is exactly what happened. My grandmother, grandfather, and uncle came to stay for a week. Now, my family and I own a German Shepherd dog named Kane. He is about 2 years old, and boy, is he hyper. Kane does not like anything coming onto our property or into our home, so he will bark for ages unless the thing leaves or we remove him from the situation. While my grandparents and uncle were here, he barked at each and every one of them through the glass storm door that's attached to our front door. And he would bark at my grandpa whenever he went to sit outside. One night, we had him inside in a dog crate because he comes inside to sleep sometimes. His crate was placed behind the couch, and sitting at the edge of the couch was my uncle. And once Kane got a good sniff and realized that he wasn't one of us, he started barking. So we had to put a blanket over his crate. Now that you know how crazy our good boy is, here's the story. As I'm telling this, my grandparents and uncle just left about an hour ago, and my uncle had quite a story to tell in the morning. Last night, Kane's crate was placed in my room because, well, I wanted him in my room. Always having outside dogs throughout my childhood, I never got to have one of them sleep in my room with me, so I was quite excited about our upcoming sleepover. After getting the crate in my room and placing a blanket down for Kane, we brought him in from outside and into my room. And in the hallway outside of my room, there are two bathrooms on the wall to the left. I closed my door so Kane wouldn't see one of my grandparents or my uncle trying to go into the bathroom and start barking at them in the middle of the night. After reading and talking to Kane a bit, I turned off the lights and we both went to sleep. In the early hours of the morning, around 1 to 3 a.m., my uncle got up from the couch to go use the bathroom on the other side of the house. We always have a small light on in the kitchen at night, so it isn't too dark. And I'm guessing that's how my uncle saw what he saw in the hallway. After walking from the living room and through the kitchen, he got to where the two bathrooms were. And sitting motionless in front of my bathroom door was what looked to be Kane. His mostly black fur almost blended in with the darkness, making it difficult to see his face. Ears straight up, not barking or growling, just staring, heavily unnerved. He turned around and walked back to the living room. A while later, my grandpa got up to use the bathroom, and lo and behold, nothing was there. My uncle was adamant that he did see Kane in that hallway. But Kane was in my room, inside of a locked cage and behind a closed door. And if he was merely seeing things due to being sleepy, the fear of the situation would have woken him up enough for his illusion of Kane sitting in the hallway to disappear. Sometimes I'll see a spider or multiple spiders on my wall while I'm half asleep, and once I blink or really look at it, they will disappear. But what my uncle saw didn't. So I believe that he did see something, but it wasn't Kane. It was something trying to take the form of Kane. For what reason? I don't know. But the intentions of that potential entity remaining unknown make it all the more disturbing. I live in the UK, and a few years ago I sold up, took early retirement, bought a boat, and dropped out to go on an adventure exploring the UK's inland waterways. I don't have a mooring through choice. The whole reason I bought a boat was to get out and explore, and doing this has taken me to some really interesting places I wouldn't have thought of visiting otherwise. I visited some urban and really lively areas like Liverpool, but also spent time out in the sticks away from everything in extremely rural and peaceful spots. It's pretty cool being able to choose your spot dependent on your mood, and if you don't like the area or don't like your neighbors, you can just throw your ropes and move. In the UK, the waterways license enables you to boat without having to take a formal marina berth, provided you genuinely keep moving, with most mooring spots being free up to 14 days before you have to move. This is called constant cruising, and if you have a decent craft, well set up for off-grid living, it's an amazing way of life. Many people choose this way if they're not tied by their jobs or on an adventure like me. But there are many living on pretty shady, unlicensed boats out on the network because they can't afford anything else, and some with some issues that you would be best to give a wide berth to. I am a lone female boater with just my dog snorkeling spaniel and two cats as crew, so I follow lots of boating forums to keep an ear out for problem areas or people and try to be sensible with my safety and my choice of stopping points. It's been very rare that I've ever had any sort of issues in the years I've been doing this, but occasionally I'll find I've got little choice about where I have to stop or how long for. In the winter time, I can often come across navigations closed due to flooding or broken infrastructure, like a broken lock stopping me in my tracks. In summer, it's not unheard of for a canal to run out of water and find myself unable to move until the level rises again. As I'm writing this, I'm stranded on a quarter-mile stretch of canal with river navigations at either end, closed due to flooding, and I've been stuck here for 2 months now. My cats like to go out, so I always try to moor away from roads and seek out spots where the cats would have an escape route from any pursuing dog, like a thick hedge or a fenced-off area of some kind. So I chose a spot right up at the end of this canal, alongside a derelict industrial area. There's a couple of gaps in the steel fencing a person can get through, and after checking it out to make sure it's reasonably safe, and finding mostly just piles of bricks and unusable but deteriorated roadway left, I've been in there regularly walking the dog, with the cats even trotting behind. Only once have I ever seen anyone else in there, and that was just another lady with her dog. My cats have discovered there's mice in there, and they're having way too much fun to come home as often as they usually do, so it's become a nightly ritual to have to go in with my head torch and dog and retrieve them before bed. They are both pretty great cats that think they're dogs, so if I go and shout for them, they'll come running and follow me all the way back. The first 7 weeks went without incident, but a few nights ago, I was in there shouting for one of my cats when I heard what sounded like bricks being bashed together in very deliberate, even-spaced multiples of three. My first thought was someone was hurt and maybe can't call out, so they were trying to get my attention, so I stopped and listened. Another three bashes came, but this time, nearer. Okay, someone's moving and definitely not stuck. So I pick up the pace and think that this is just weird. It's 11 p.m. and below zero with ice everywhere. There's no shelter, just piles of bricks. So why would anyone be in here? My cat comes bounding up at this point, so I just scoop her up and practically run back towards the fence. Another three bashes. The first one really loud and heavily emphasized, and again, all very deliberate and evenly spaced, but this time, nearer again. I've moved quite a distance and turned a corner by this point, but the noise has followed and switched sides like they had cut the corner and almost caught up with me. I get us all through the fence and back on the boat, locking it all down. At first, I don't hear anything, but my cats do, and they keep lifting their heads and alerting to something outside. But then I do hear it. The fence is only about 10 feet from my side of the boat, and I hear a growling, coming from the other side. Loud growling. It was a god-awful sound, and I sat there scared witless, wondering what kind of freak would be doing that, and what they were going to do next. If you can imagine a human trying to mimic the sound of a slow revving motorbike, it kinda sounded like that, and this went on for nearly 10 minutes. I turned all my lights off in case they could see in, and sat awake for hours, too scared to sleep, and constantly watching my crew for any indication that they could hear anything, but there was nothing further, and I eventually fell asleep. 2 days later, I was walking down the towpath and walked past a small, rough-looking cruiser moored about 200 yards away from me. As I passed, I heard a man's voice mimicking me, calling my cat's name, like I had been that night before. I looked over and saw a really scruffy and dirty-looking man, I would say in his 30s, with dark hooded eyes and god-awful teeth, grinning at me. I have no doubt this was his way of telling me that it had been him that night, and he looked like he was now trying to freak me out even more. So I stopped for a second and gave him my best defiant, "I'm not scared of you, and you would think again, because I am a secret badass" stare. I even managed a sly psycho-esque grin of my own right back at him before walking off. I don't know why I reacted like that. Generally, challenging someone who might be unbalanced is a dangerous thing to do and wouldn't be my usual approach. Apart from the fact he looked mentally ill at best, possessed at worst. Anyone who roams around at night growling has some real scary issues. But just there in the moment, I just instinctively felt the need to stare him down and not show fear. And boy, do I hope my instincts were right, because I am still stuck here, and despite my bravado, I am in no way a badass. Thankfully, haven't seen him since. In fact, in the 2 months I've been here, that was the only time I have clapped my eyes on him at all, despite walking past the boat every other day. I really hope to keep it that way. And as soon as those navigation lights change to signify the river is open again, me and my furry crew are out of here. And to the possessed-looking growling guy, I hope your boat is as clapped out as it looks, so that you can't follow.
In early 2007, I was on a traveling singing group. There were 8 of us on a team, and the team members were switched every single year. We were invited to stay at the evening at the house of a previous member, named Drew. Drew wasn't home, so it was mom, his sister, and his brother who hosted us. Now, we'd all known Drew's dad died about 4 years earlier, but he died of a heart attack and not in the house. I generally try not to be superstitious, but I went into the house and immediately felt just a little uncomfortable. I think I blamed it on the fact that Drew and I never really seen eye to eye. Or that I felt bad for his mom, who'd been widowed so young and left with 3 children. A sleeping space was very limited, got put down on a cot in the basement, along with the other girl in my team. The basement wasn't a creepy basement by any means. It had been refinished and was pretty comfortable. My cot was only about 1 foot from the wall, and there was a small old digital clock between the wall and the cot. I fell asleep in my usual manner, facing the wall, back to the room. At 2:48, and I'll never forget the clock, since it was the only thing that I could focus on, I woke up very suddenly. I was immediately frozen in bed. My heart was racing. My throat went tight, and I couldn't swallow. This was primal fear at its best. I couldn't roll over to check, but I swear, even now, that something was standing over me. Everything in my instinct told me not to turn around. It felt like my life was depending on me staying right where I was. During this time of intense fear, I kept seeing images in my mind. Flashes of gore and horrible things. I could also hear a laughing in my ears, but not the voice of just one person laughing. It sounded like I was in a room with thousands of voices laughing. I remember for the first time having suicide run across my mind during this overwhelming, fear-driven time. I should note here, that I'm not, and I've never been suicidal. When that feeling went away, the last thing I remember hearing in my mind was, "Not this one." I looked at the clock again, and only 9 minutes had passed. The longest fucking 9 minutes of my life. A few hours later when I got up, I decided I was going to get the hell out of there as quickly as I possibly could. I skipped the shower and breakfast and sat in the van waiting for the rest of my team. As I was waiting, Drew's brother came out and spoke with me. And in one sentence he said, "I'm sorry I couldn't help you this morning." As he said it, he had tears in his eyes. He honestly looked like he was going to be sick to me. The look of hopelessness in his eyes still haunts me to this day. 2 weeks later, we got word that Drew's brother had killed himself just before 3 a.m. Ever since the incident, I still occasionally will have dreams about that laughing. Part of me wonders if I would have just tried talking to his brother, maybe things would have been different. I never spoke about this to anyone but my husband. It brings back a chill to my spine just writing this down, and an overwhelming sense of guilt. I don't know what to make of it, or what the hell really happened inside that house, and part of me never wants to know either. This story is from a childhood friend who told me this, and it still unnerves me to this day. She was genuinely freaked out, and her family even backed up her claims, so here it goes. My friend and her family moved into this rental property, and my friend claimed that it was haunted. Everyone agreed that there was an off feeling, and those who visited or stayed over there would mention it as well. I myself experienced this odd feeling of foreboding whenever I went over there, and believed the consensus that the house was indeed haunted. It honestly felt oppressive inside there, and you would feel this pitiful dread that is hard to compute into words. It was extremely uncomfortable to experience, just to say the least. Anyway, this particular event, and that is the basis of this post, was enough for my friend's family to pack up and stay with relatives until they moved out permanently. On this fateful afternoon, my friend had arrived back home from the park and heard an argument taking place in the kitchen between her mom and dad. My friend thought this was odd, as both of her parents should be at work, so she called out, "Mom," before unlocking the front door and going inside. My friend said the house felt instantly silent. An uncanny silence, like all the air had been sucked out of the place. It felt stifling. It felt wrong. Then her mom said, "Hey, we're just in here." My friend was just outside, closed the kitchen door at this point, and froze beyond opening. It was her mother's voice, but there was something off. Like the cadence was missing that made it actually her mother's. It sounded flat and unnatural. Friend decided to bolt back out the front door and wait until her brother came home. But she said as she turned back, she saw her mother peering at her from the lounge room window. But it wasn't her mother. The face was the same. Everything was the same. But her face was devoid of anything that actually made it her mother. There was no recognition on her mother's face. There was no indication that she was looking directly at her daughter. There's no emotion in the expression. Nothing. The eyes looked unstaring and utterly blank. My friend screamed and ran down the street to her mother's work and confirmed that she was there this entire time and had never been at home. Initially, my friend's mother reasoned that someone must have broke in, but at a later investigation, it proved nothing had been stolen. The back door was locked, as was the front door when my friend came home. No one could rationalize who my friend saw in the window and why it looked so much like her mother. So that was the deciding factor to nope the fuck out of there and find somewhere else to live. The landlord of the house denied anything like this had happened while they lived there, but did admit that tenants didn't stay long, saying there was something wrong in the house. My friend also told me that she was the only one who actually saw anything definitively sinister inside that house. But her family said they definitely felt an evil presence there, which ultimately manifested into the doppelganger experience that my friend had. Utterly terrifying.